A lecture hall at London's Cass Business School filled with ambitious students expecting another forgettable talk. Then a 30-something Indian monk walked in, shaved head, simple robes, radiating something rare in that world of ambition, genuine contentment. He'd walked away from India's equivalent of MIT, yet seemed happier than any successful executive these future business leaders had ever met. For 18-year-old Jay Shetty, that dissonance sparked a question that would reshape his life. What if we've been chasing the wrong things? 4 years later, Shetty traded his designer suits for monk's robes and spent 3 years in an ashram learning Vedic practices designed not to escape reality, but to face it with unprecedented clarity. What he discovered wasn't mystical abstraction, but practical neuroscience. Monks' brains show gamma wave patterns associated with attention and happiness at levels rarely documented in ordinary people. The difference? Monks cultivate what Shetty calls monk mind, thoughtful, intentional, value-driven, while most of us live in monkey mind, restlessly jumping between worries without resolution. This isn't about renouncing the world, it's about bringing ancient wisdom into modern chaos. We're all method actors, performing different versions of ourselves online, at work, with family. These roles help us navigate social complexity, but somewhere beneath the performance lies our authentic self, obscured like a dusty mirror. From childhood, external forces shape us. Parents praise certain behaviors while criticizing others. Education funnels us toward particular values. Media breeds comparison. When we fill every quiet moment with distractions, these external influences become our default identity rather than conscious choices. The ashram taught Shetty that discovering your true self requires an uncomfortable audit. How do you actually spend your time and money? We'll spend 33 years in bed, 11 years consuming media. These patterns reveal our lived values, often contradicting what we claim matters most. A person who says family is everything but works 80-hour weeks is living someone else's values. After identifying your default values, consciously choose higher ones, fearlessness, gratitude, compassion, service, over lower ones like greed and ego. Then curate your environment ruthlessly. Studies show a happy friend increases your own happiness by 25%. Ask yourself, does time with this person bring me closer to who I want to be? This isn't about isolation, but intentional connection, filtering influences to align with your deepest aspirations. Negativity spreads when our core needs, peace, love, and understanding, feel threatened. We respond by complaining, comparing, and criticizing, making negativity our default mode. Monks view everyone as patients with different ailments. When someone hurts you, they're usually hurting themselves. This perspective transforms defensiveness into understanding, creating space for healing rather than escalation. Research shows most people change correct answers to match a group's wrong ones, explaining why complaint cultures breed more complaint. Venting doesn't process anger, it increases aggression. Long-term negativity physically shrinks the hippocampus and floods our system with cortisol, impairing immunity and mental clarity. To handle external negativity, become an objective observer. Step back emotionally to understand without judgment. For unavoidable negative relationships, follow the 25-75 principle. Balance every negative person with three uplifting ones. Resist the ego-driven urge to save everyone. Only help if you have the skills and capacity. For your own negativity, use spot, stop, swap. Recognize the impulse, pause to consider its source, then choose a healthier response. True freedom isn't saying whatever you want, it's not feeling the need to say negative things at all. The most powerful antidote? Forgiveness. Buddhist nun Pema Chodron realized her post-divorce anger was like a malignant cell spreading negativity. By forgiving her ex-husband, she found freedom. When you wish healing for both sides, you achieve peace. Buddha taught that fear doesn't prevent death, it prevents life. Like the warrior Arjuna dropping his bow before battle, fear can paralyze us at crucial moments. Yet fear isn't inherently negative. It's a warning signal we can use productively. Our bodies can't distinguish between real and imagined threats. Whether facing genuine danger or thinking about taxes, the physiological response is identical: fight, flee, or freeze. Successfully handling intermittent stressors builds confidence, helping us differentiate legitimate from unnecessary fears. The key is externalizing fear and observing it objectively. Acknowledge its presence through deep breathing while saying, "I see you," to your pain, giving it attention without surrendering control. Most fears trace back to attachment, our need to own and control things. When we accept everything's temporary nature, we feel gratitude for borrowing rather than fearing loss. Like enjoying a luxury rental car without dreading its return, detachment allows appreciation without constant anxiety. When panic strikes, your breath is the most powerful circuit breaker. Deep breathing activates the vagus nerve, shifting from fight, flight, freeze to rest and digest. Inhale for 4 counts, hold for 4, exhale for 4 or more. This realigns body and mind, preventing fear from immobilizing you. We envision ideal lives believing they'll bring happiness, but must examine what truly drives our ambitions and whether they'll actually fulfill us. 4 fundamental motivations shape every choice: fear, concerns about survival or loss; desire, seeking personal gratification; duty, responsibility and doing what's right; and love, care for others. These forces underlie everything from daily decisions to life-changing commitments. Fear ignites action, but cannot sustain us long-term. Similarly, chasing material goals, million-dollar homes, financial freedom, impressive titles, traps us in Maya, Sanskrit for illusion. We believe success equals happiness, but external measures rarely deliver lasting fulfillment. As Jim Carrey observed, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that it's not the answer." Monks focus not on happiness, but meaning, satisfaction from living purposefully. When motivated by duty and love, we endure more discomfort because it's tied to something greater. We handle stress better when associated with meaningful goals or people we care about. To live intentionally, discover the deepest why behind your wants. Repeatedly asking why about desires uncovers true intentions, often revealing we're ultimately seeking internal feelings like security or belonging, not the external achievement itself. Monks use the analogy of seeds and weeds. Intentions rooted in love, compassion, or service grow into expansive trees, providing fruit and shelter. But vengeful or self-motivated intentions grow weeds, sprouting from ego, greed, envy, or anger that never blossom. Life becomes more meaningful when we define ourselves by intentions rather than achievements. Living intentionally means embodying your values. If you want to help people, be kind and open-hearted. If you want to support family, be present and hardworking. Monk life isn't just about letting go. It's about discovering your calling. At the ashram, monks rotate through chores and observe natural affinities, discovering their dharma, where talents meet the world's needs. When these align, you find fulfillment through using your best abilities for something that matters. 2 lies haunt us: you'll never amount to anything, and you can be anything you want to be. The truth? You can't be anything you want, but you can be everything you are. Your dharma isn't buried elsewhere. It's already woven into your being. The Bhagavad Gita teaches it's better to perform your own dharma imperfectly than another's perfectly. Tennis champion Andre Agassi hated tennis despite success. It wasn't his dharma. True fulfillment came later through his foundation serving at-risk youth. Our society focuses on strengthening weaknesses rather than building strengths. But what if we view weaknesses as someone else's dharma? Sister Joan Chittister wrote that our limitations make space for the gifts of other people. To unveil your dharma, identify passions, activities you both love and excel at naturally. Rather than dramatic career changes, look for opportunities within current life. The Bhagavad Gita describes 4 personality types: creators, who make things happen; makers, who implement and value stability; guides, who coach others, and leaders, natural people leaders directed by courage. Test your Dharma through exploration. Keep an activity journal tracking responses. Did I enjoy the process? Did others enjoy the result? Dig deeper to find the root of what you enjoy. When in your Dharma, you experience flow where you lose track of time and consistency that improves with practice. Once you understand your Dharma, structure life to fulfill it. Don't wait for others to recognize your potential. Demonstrate it. The Munasriti says, Dharma protects those who protect it. When you consistently place yourself where you thrive, people notice, creating a positive feedback loop that protects your joy and purpose. The highest purpose in life is living in service to others. During monk training, Shetty progressed from seeking handouts to helping others to sharing his possessions. Sister Christine Vladimirov describes monastic life as requiring both an inward journey of prayer and an outward journey of sensitivity to others' needs. Nature demonstrates this principle. Trees provide oxygen, the sun gives light and heat. Service aligns us with cosmic order. The concept of yukta vairagya means doing everything for a higher purpose. We can own possessions as long as we use them for good. Service fulfills us deeply. Studies show pursuing compassionate goals reduces anxiety and depression while activating our brain's pleasure center. Seva, Sanskrit for selfless service, is giving without expectation of return. You don't need financial or emotional stability before serving others. Research shows people with less money often give proportionally more, possibly because experiencing hardship builds empathy. Service doesn't require changing your occupation. You can serve through what you're already doing. Opportunities exist everywhere: schools, religious institutions, neighborhood drives, visiting sick relatives, or offering restaurant leftovers to homeless people. Buddhist scholar Joanna Macy advises, do what calls your heart. Effective action comes from love. Serve through the pain you know best. Connect your personal struggles with related charitable causes matching your Dharma. The path to fulfillment isn't found by climbing higher, but by reaching deeper, into service, into purpose, into the recognition that we're all connected.